That Money Show with Gabriel Nussbaum on FUBAR Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the first episode of That Money Show in 2025. I am so excited to be back giving you your weekly supplement of money knowledge, money advice, money tips and tricks. So, well, just a nice and simple welcome back. Hope you had a good little break off. I know that I did for sure. Anyway, what's going on in That Money Show? If you are brand new here and you are joining us for the first time in 2025, this is the show where we break down what's going on in the news. We give you everything actually relevant to do with money and the economy. And then, of course, we bring in a range of experts, a range of famous faces, a range of guests to give us their own personal finance advice and experiences. And then I also love to answer the questions that you send in every single week. So, what's coming up specifically on this week's show? Well, we're going to kick off, like I said, with the news, but we've also got Amy Knight from NerdWallet's UK's personal finance expert, and also Niaz Azad, the co-founder of Millennial Money UK and host of the Loose Change podcast. What a show, guys. Stick around. I am very excited for this one. But should we kick off with the news? I think that's a pretty good idea because I've got quite a few weeks to catch you up on. Normally things are nice and quiet around this time of year. You know, everyone should be off work, but there's still plenty of news when it comes to finance stuff. So let's kick off with what's been happening this week. Has anyone had snow? I mean, I feel like I was a school teacher there and expecting a bunch of people to raise their hands before realising I'm the only person sat in this room right now. Well, there was a little bit of snow where I lived. London got like a light sprinkling. I remember looking outside of my window at like 11 o'clock at night and seeing just a tad. But up north, and when I say up north, I'm not just referring to what Londoners refer to as Watford and north of that. I'm going as far as places like Manchester, Scotland, Northern Ireland, and all those kind of areas in the north of the UK. I sound like such a Londoner right now, so I am severely sorry to all of my northern listeners. But I'm not sure if anyone from the south is aware, but the north got hit quite badly with some severe weather. We're talking about huge amounts of snow, freezing rain, covering all kind of parts in the north of the UK. I mean, and like I said, a little bit in the south, but mainly in the north. And what did that actually do? Well, it disrupted transport. In particular, the moment we get a bit of bad weather in this country, planes. Planes are absolutely grounded, and this is the time of year where people are probably coming back from a lot of holidays or heading to a holiday if they're trying to, you know, go on the other side when things get a little bit cheaper at the beginning of January because, you know, all the schools are back. So you might, I'm going to go on holiday right at the start of January because I need something to cheer me up because it's really dark outside. Anyway, places, for example, like Manchester Airport, until mid-morning on Sunday could not take off. So that was Saturday night all through till mid-morning on Sunday, and then incoming flights were delayed. It was basically a bit of a shit show all over the place. Things were going really badly due to these kind of wintry conditions, and we had some closures on the rail. And no, I'm not just a news weather reporter. What has this got to do with your money? Well, one of my favorite ever personal finance hacks is making sure that you know what to do when you have a delayed or cancelled flight, because there is some money to be made. I'm not simply like kind of referring to trying to be delayed. Obviously, ideally, we want to get places that we're going on time. But if you do have travel disruption, in particular to flights, then there are things you need to be aware of. Now, let me preface this by saying that compensation normally is not paid out by airlines if it's due to severe out of their control conditions, for example, snow. So I'm really sorry to those of you that were affected quite specifically this week with the flight delays and stuff like that. But it's still a topic that you should know and is brought up and made relevant by the fact there have been so many flight delays and cancellations. So what can you do? Well, if it is within the airline's control, for example, they've got staffing shortages, or, you know, they had something, I don't know, a delay from their previous flight that knocked on the next one, that knocked on the next one, that knocked on the next one, basically something within their control, you can make quite a bit of money flying out of the UK for delayed flights. And remember, this is all to do with the time that you land. So let's say, for example, you take off an hour late, but you actually, a lot of airlines can do this, they can make up the time, then, and you land on time, you can't really get compensation for that. But listen up to this. If you are delayed on a flight, according to a rule called EU261, if your flight is less than 1,500 kilometres and you've been delayed over 3 hours from your landing time, €250 is what you are deserving of, basically. Deserving of. Makes it sound like you've done really hard work. If you've been delayed between 1,500 kilometres and 3,500 kilometres, I expect you all to be getting out rulers and measuring it on a map right now, or you can just use Google, but it's up to you. €400 could be yours. Sorry, it's in euros. It was a European law. You can do the translation as well on Google when it comes to currencies. And lastly, flights over 3,500 kilometres, €600. And how do I know about this? Well, I've been paid €600 for being delayed on a flight before. So it is real. And every airline is kind of signed up to this if you're flying out of the UK. So these are really significant things for you to know about. If your flight has been cancelled, by the way, and it was less than 14 days before your flight that you were notified of the cancellation, the same compensation rules do apply. And remember, if your airline is somehow able to get you onto a flight that gets you to your destination with less delay than what I'm talking about, less than 3 hours, then you won't get the compensation. It's all about the time that you land versus the time that you were expected to land. And yes, for the little intricate details, this does apply to if you had layovers with that airline and all those kind of, you know, blah, 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 blah. Still applies. Cool. The other thing that's really important to know, and this probably is more relevant to those of you that were delayed this week with all of the cold weather. So you might have been sat in an airport for 5, 6, 7 hours before getting told that you can finally take off. There are a number of things that your airline does have to provide for you in order to kind of like make life a little bit more comfortable. So let's start with this. If you are delayed 2 or more hours and it's a short distance flight up to 1,500 kilometres, they are entitled to give you snacks and drinks as well as 2 phone calls or 2 emails. I feel like these rules were written a while ago. They were entitled to give you 2 phone calls or 2 emails. I really hope that you do have data for that. But if you don't, that would come quite useful. If you're delayed more than 3 hours and you're sat in the airport, you are deserving of the same if your flight was between 1,500 and 3,500 kilometres. And it's the exact same rules again if your flight is longer than 3,500 kilometres, but this time you have to be delayed by over 4 hours. Now, what happens if you are delayed over 5 hours? Well, this is quite interesting. Passengers are entitled to withdraw from the flight. The airline must then either reimburse them or find them alternative transportation. And if your flight's postponed to the following day, the airline must provide accommodation in a hotel as well as transport to and from the hotel and the airport. So these are really kind of important things. It's not always just about compensation. Of course, you should be getting reimbursed if a flight is ever cancelled. You should get your money back unless they're putting you on another flight. Then it might be to do with the difference in price. But they need to take care of you in the airport. So there you go. A little bit of financial knowledge off the back of those airline cancellations. What else is going on? Well, house prices. What a way to kick off the year. Is something good happening? Well, it depends. If you own a house, probably quite good, because UK house prices enter 2024 some 4.7% higher than the start of the year, according to Nationwide. That shows you that property prices in the UK yet again have been remarkably resilient. That is the words of Nationwide. And what is the average house price right now? £269,426, according to Nationwide. By the way, Halifax, I love a bit of a bank versus bank. Halifax are debating that. So Nationwide coming at £269,000. Halifax is saying that the average house price right now is £298,083. I mean, maybe they can have a chat with each other and come somewhere in the middle. I don't know. I don't know why their data is so different. I assume it's towards the houses that they're lending towards. Halifax are clearly lending towards much more expensive properties. So what does this actually mean for you? Well, firstly, it shows you the resilience of house prices in this country. And if you are thinking that there's going to be another drop or another drop and another drop, they seem to just keep ticking up and up and up. I mean, looking at kind of like the data, there was that little drop after, I think, the peak of 2022. But bounced straight back up again. So house prices never seem to fail us. But looking forward towards 2025, what does this mean for house prices? In particular, to those of you that might be interested in buying a property for the first time. Well, one thing that's been going on quite a lot in 2024 was the interest rates from the Bank of England. Of course, we had our first drop after a really, really long time. And that was actually followed by a second drop. So we had 2 drops last year. The interest rates from the Bank of England went from 5.25 and went out at 5.75%. And people actually expected 2025 a few months ago to have far more drops. People thinking 4, even 6 drops, taking us below the 4% mark in interest rates, even close to 3.5% interest rates by the end of 2025. However, due to the little budget we had a few months ago, there's been a few revisions. And now the most common expectation for the interest rate next year is just two drops. So we're expecting to go from 4.75% to 4.25% by the end of this year. What does this actually mean, this pricing in these two interest drops? It means that mortgage prices might start to get a little bit better, but this is not guaranteed. And why is this not guaranteed? Well, we just saw from the last interest rate drop, where it went from 5 to 4.75, that mortgage rates were barely affected at all. In fact, some went up slightly because they aren't just correlated to the current interest rates. They also look at kind of long-term expectations of where things are going. So this will kind of lead me to kind of the one thing that I always say when someone says, is now the right time to buy a property? If you can afford it, yeah, go for it. And if you can't afford it, no. Obviously, we all want to try and have that crystal ball and predict where interest rates are going and are they going to go down and am I going to get a slightly better interest rate? But the truth is, at that moment where you know you can afford the property, you have the deposit and you can afford the monthly repayments, and you are also aware that if interest rates go up, you would still be secure and able to afford those monthly repayments on a mortgage, then it could just be the right time. Because remember, once interest rates start going down, demand starts going up and house prices start going up even quicker. So you might be saving a few pounds every single month on your mortgage rate if the rates go down, but the house price that you wanted to buy might go up by about 15, 20, 50,000, depending on obviously the price of your property you are looking at. So these are really important things to be aware of. And the last thing that I do want to make you aware of, so anyone who is on benefits or knows someone on benefits, this is a really important one, especially at this time of year, because cold weather payments have been triggered for the start of 2025. You did not hear me incorrectly. Cold weather payments are a real thing. So what is a cold weather payment and how does it work? Well, it's very simple. The name is actually spot on. It is a payment you get when there is cold weather. Obviously, we're going to need some specifics. So the average temperature in your local area must be 0 degrees Celsius or less for 7 days in a row. So either it has to have been that or has to be forecast that for the next 7 days. These are 7 consecutive days in a row. So that happened on the 3rd of January. Payments were triggered in dozens of postcode areas in Cumbria, Northumberland and parts of England and in the Scottish borders. The temperature does need to be recorded by the weather station nearest to your postcode. And then the payments are nothing to do with your age. So it's nothing to do with the winter payment, fuel allowance for pensioners or anything to do with that. If you are on benefits such as pension credit, income support, income-based job seekers allowance, income-related employment and support allowance, universal credit, although there are some certain exceptions, and support for mortgage interest, you should look into whether or not you should be getting these payments. These are for a 7-day period. They are worth £25 and they should happen automatically. It happens between the 1st of November and the 31st of March. So if you have a random cold blip at the start of April, unfortunately, these cold weather payments no longer happen. So remember to always, always look into what benefits you are able to claim, because there are literally millions, if not billions of pounds worth of benefits that go unclaimed every single year. Please do fact check me on that. I'm not sure if it's an M or a B, million or billion. But the point still stands. There are so many people that are ignoring benefits that they should be allowed to claim. I've discussed this on so many shows before, but you can a quick Google search will give you all the answers you need. So please make sure you are not missing out on free money that you deserve. Anyway, guys, you've been fully caught up on the news. I mean, there's plenty more to discuss, so you're just going to have to come back next week and listen again. But stick around, because after this short break, I'm going to be joined by Amy Knight, NerdWallet's UK's personal finance expert.
FUPAR Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison, my SAS sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got acting now with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either, because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio. Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all FUBAR shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app. Just search for FUBAR Radio on the Apple and Google app stores. Yay! The FUBAR Radio app. Get it today. Get it today.
One in five people in the UK are disabled, and it's not always visible. So if we've made ourselves at home in priority spaces on the bus or train, surrounded by our shopping bags or bikes, we could be making it harder for the people who need that space more than us. So let's not forget about the people we share our journeys with, and keep priority spaces clear for others. Remember, it's everyone's journey.
When it comes to heart attacks, you might be surprised to hear the symptoms don't always feel severe. You could experience a squeezing across the chest, a feeling of unease, a sense something's not quite right. Don't be tempted to dismiss the signs and wait to see what happens. The faster you seek medical help, the better your chances. It's never too early to call 999 and describe your symptoms. Your NHS is here for you.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets? I went back to the bloke, said, yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do. What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
What the Hell with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the truth. And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle. I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
Making personal finance simpler with Gabriel Nussbaum. This is That Money Show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show. Thank you for sticking around. And as promised, I am going to be joined now by Amy Knight, NerdWallet's UK's personal finance expert, to talk about quite an interesting topic. Now, we thought we were out of the cost of living crisis. We thought that maybe we were saying bye-bye to that in 2024. Finally, we're going to move into a fresh start, 2025, and things are going to slowly start, not to get cheaper, but maybe not to get as expensive just as fast. Well, like I said, I'm joined by Amy now to potentially share some not-so-fun news about why we might be going into, not as bad, but into a slightly smaller cost of living crisis yet again. Amy, welcome back to That Money Show. Happy 2025, I think. Yeah, it's only the 6th today. I can still say that, right? Happy New Year.
Absolutely. Happy New Year.
I'm sorry to everyone for kind of breaking this news and kind of talking about prices going up again, yet again. But what's happening? Why are we still talking about this?
Prices are going up, you're right. And some of the increases have hit us already, although people may not have noticed yet. So from the 1st of January, the energy price cap went up, adding £21 to the average annual bill. Bus fares went up on the 1st of January. And then we've got increases in rail fares, water bills, council tax and stamp duty all to look forward to in the first part of this year.
So are these normal changes? Are these things that happen every single year anyway because of inflation? Or are these kind of things that aren't expected and are genuinely adding to another cost of living crisis?
Most of them are to be expected. The stamp duty one is a bit of a shocker. That's going to unfortunately impact a lot of first-time buyers and make it much harder to get onto the property ladder. But in terms of energy bills and general price increases, certainly things like groceries, inflation is, as you say, the driving force behind that. Inflation's at 2.6% at the moment. We're going to find out next week whether it went up or down in terms of the rate that prices changed in November. And some parts of the economy are growing at a faster rate and prices are having to keep up, unfortunately.
And we're not just done in January, because come April this year, we're expecting another hike because of the impact of things happening to businesses. Are you happy to kind of share what our Chancellor announced and the changes taking place in April that will start to implement another wave of price increases if they, again, haven't already happened?
Absolutely. We spoke about this just before Christmas, didn't we? Because this was one of the top financial stories of 2024, that in the Chancellor's budget, she announced that employers would have to pay more in national insurance contributions and the minimum wage is going up, which is great news for workers. But both of those factors combined put small businesses under so much financial pressure. A lot of them are going to be forced to put their prices up, costing us more.
Exactly. So to kind of summarise, we won't go into the specific changes again because you can listen to, like Amy said, our last show where we said it was one of the highlights of 2024, not one of our favourite parts of 2024, quite the opposite. We don't like prices of things going up at all, but it's definitely one of the biggest financial impact moments of the year, was the fact that things are getting more expensive for businesses. Labour kind of went after businesses in terms of trying to increase how much money they bring in through taxes and other vehicles, et cetera, et cetera. But what they don't kind of advertise is that businesses don't absorb these costs. They pass them on to employees, and also, of course, onto consumers. With most studies saying that over the next few years, about 80% of these costs are going to be passed on to us, the people, the workers, and the people buying the stuff from them. And April is the point where a lot of these changes are actually taking place. Minimum wage is going to go up. National insurance changes are actually going to start happening as well. And so that might be the point where companies start to flick the switch on some products. Potentially some will go kind of like a cliff edge and say all of a sudden now X is 5-10% more expensive because of what's happening to us. And some might start to ease us into it a little bit. But regardless of which way round their tactics are, prices are on the up yet again, which is... yeah, great. Good fun for us. So what are the main things that people should, I suppose, be aware of right now? You know, this is the point where people are refreshing their budgets, hopefully taking a look at their finances, trying to clean things up. And it kind of sounds like they're being punched in the face before they've even had a chance to put up their fists and defend themselves. So how can people prepare at this time of year?
Yeah, absolutely. I can appreciate the punch in the stomach analogy, but I would suggest to think of how you take your vitamins at this time of year and you're trying to give your body a fighting chance against all these disgusting viruses going around. So there are things you can do to give your finances a fighting chance. You can boost your financial health and your financial resilience. And the budget is the starting point for that. You need to audit what you've been spending and get really clear on what's a need and what's is a want. So you look at your outgoings, where could you reduce them now to give you a little bit more breathing room? And then where could you cut your spending down further if you were to have a massive increase in your bills? Where could you find that extra money? So for example, if your water bill goes up, if your council tax goes up, what could you live without? Is it the takeaways? Is it Disney Plus? Just to try and ease that financial strain. The next piece of advice would be to build a buffer for bigger bills. So if you've got a little bit of cash spare at the moment, tuck it away in a savings account. Ideally, you want that somewhere that's earning a higher interest rate than the inflation rate, then you're growing your money. And then if you are unexpectedly hit with a massive direct debit because your provider's increased the monthly payment, you've got that little pocket of money so that you're not having to go into debt to cover that bill. You can economize on your food shop. So you could downshift, or it's sometimes called trading down. If you're used to shopping at a particular supermarket, try the budget supermarket. See if you can get all of your basics for less. And then you can just go to your favorite supermarket for the odd treat. And that should trim quite a bit off your grocery bill each month.
I love all of that. I want to kind of dive into each of these categories now with you, because that's brilliant general money saving advice. But let's kind of dive into each of these price increases and try and give, you know, the listener one or two things that they can be aware of, as well as what's actually happening. So let's start with the energy price. I think there was an announcement pretty recently that the price increase, is it in 2 or 3 months from now, around April, is going up a little bit more than expected, an extra £20 or £25 compared to their original estimations. So with utility prices in particular, how can people save money in that category?
I like to think of the January transfer window at this point.
I like it. Not very active for my football team.
With your energy provider. And find somebody that can give you a cheaper deal. If you've been shopping around using comparison sites, looking at where you could get a fixed rate deal for less per month, that's a nice way of locking in your costs, makes it easier to budget. But you can also take back a little bit of control if you're able to make your home more efficient and reduce the amount of energy that you're wasting. Switching things off at the socket, every little bit helps.
All right, I like it. Two good tips, including a January transfer window. Remember, these companies are not loyal to you, so don't be loyal to them. It's like the bank switching idea where someone's like, well, I'm with a bank provider because I've always been with them. Well, why? Like, actually reevaluate it. They don't really care about you, so do you care about them? Okay, that's utilities, in particular energy prices. Food, you did give a little bit of a hint with food and groceries about down kind of grading your shopping experience. But what other things can people look to do? Imagine if they're already at the budget stop that they shop at. There isn't anything cheaper than the one they're currently at. Are there any other tactics that people can implement to save on groceries, which is another huge monthly bill for people?
Cutting down waste is really, really important, because if you've got no money to spare, the absolute last thing you want to be doing is throwing food in the bin. So being really organized to plan your meals, write down the ingredients you need, and freezing your leftovers. You can also work out what times of the week and what times of the day different shops are marking down their prices. Go and sweep up the things you're going to need and stick them in the freezer if you can.
I like it. And my one is, even though people are probably very against this, you do have to sign up to the loyalty schemes. It's unfortunate. They want your data, they get your data. But I just don't see a world where you can go into, for example, Tesco and not pay their club card prices, because they are so much cheaper than the normal prices. I'm not saying they're cheap. I'm saying that the normal prices are just so expensive and the club card prices are just normal. They are what you need to be paying with. So, I mean, if you like to have 1,000 cards in your wallet, go down that route. But you can get the apps. You can just screenshot all of your little QR codes or whatever you need to scan at checkout and just have all of them on your phone, which you know you're going to be taking to the shop every single time. I have all of them saved and I'm ready to go with 3 or 4 different shops in my area. So I will never, ever, ever not scan the club card price or whatever it is for the relevant supermarket. You mentioned stamp duty in particular for first-time buyers, but it is for all buyers whatsoever. So what's going on there and what can people do if they want to buy a house?
Stamp duty, that change is going to come into effect on the 1st of April. So there are a lot of people scrabbling to try and get a transaction through before the end of March. And some people will be able to, and some people unfortunately won't. So if you're in that category of trying to move and hoping that your sale's going to go through before the threshold changes, I would suggest if you can save money for the worst case scenario, a lot of moves don't happen on the timeline that people want them to. So have that contingency where you've got the money if you needed to pay a few extra £1,000 stamp duty, and then hopefully you won't have to. But what's going to happen is the nil rate threshold, it has been at £250,000 and it's going down to £125,000. So properties will be subject to stamp duty over that amount. And then the first time buyer threshold is a bit more generous, but that's also moving down. It will change from £425,000 down to £300,000. Given that the average house price in England is already at £308,000, most first-time buyers are going to end up paying some stamp duty, particularly in areas like London and the South East where property prices are much higher.
Yeah, so I think the kind of tip here is if you are in the process, maybe your solicitors are talking to each other, you're getting through everything, just I would lean on them a little bit more than you maybe currently are right now, because as of April, stamp duty is going up. And there is, imagine, let's say you complete on your property 5 days after that stamp duty change. You'll be kicking yourself because that is thousands of extra pounds that you will have to pay needlessly if you can just lean on them and get things done a little bit quicker on the right side of April being, you know, March, not in this case May, even though some people say the right side of April is May because it's just, you know, a little bit warmer. But we're talking about house prices here, people, not weather. Stop distracting me. I know it's cold outside. It's just a thing. So yeah, get a move on. If you are someone, however, I think that's in the kind of property hunt period right now, I wouldn't rush a property purchase, like going out and just agreeing and finding one and putting an offer on that maybe you weren't completely happy with just because of the stamp duty change. Please, please make sure that you would have made that purchase regardless of what's going on with stamp duty, because this is quite literally going to be the biggest purchase of your life. And yes, a few thousand pounds does make a big difference, but in the actual relative, like we said, of the average house price being around £300,000 right now, that's much more concerning, and you don't want to kind of end up in a property that you're not happy with just because you rushed it because of stamp duty. But you've got still 4 months, plenty of time to buy a property. I mean, probably not. I don't know why I said that. It's not that long to buy a property, but that's just something to be aware of. So kind of looking forward towards the future, we've said there's going to be another little rise now, another potential rise in terms of cost of living in April. Are we getting to the peak of this word, cost of living? What's happening in the future? What does 2025 have in store if you had your crystal ball in front of you when it came to prices going up? Or are we kind of getting towards the peak when things calm down finally this year?
I think if there's a phrase that's been used even more than cost of living crisis, it's new normal. We've been saying that, haven't we, since we came out of COVID.
I think I just had a shiver go down my spine.
Higher prices look to be the new normal. So adjusting your expectations and budgeting and living within your means. And then if things really calm down on the inflation front, we have briefly got below 2% at the end of last year. It's jumped back up again, but broadly speaking, it's hovering roughly where the Bank of England want it. And we're still expecting interest rate cuts, maybe only 2 or 3 this year, but that should ease a little bit of pressure. So it's not all bad news.
Okay. I feel like new normal originally scared me, but I think it's one of those things like ripping the band-aid off. It's just, if you can admit that to yourself, that this is the price of what things are, and you're not kind of living just to hope things get better in the future, and you can just accept it and customize your budget, your saving, your spending to what's happening right now. Hopefully that way, like you said, things will feel a little bit more comfortable this year. Well, Amy, thank you for joining me on the first show of 2025. I'm sure there's going to be plenty more. And I think I can say it again, Happy New Year.
Thanks very much. Have a good one.
Thank you. Well, there you go. Things are going up in price, but Amy left us with a little bit of happiness at the end of it. I know I scared you guys, and I promise I'm going to try and make the money stories this year a little bit happier and give you good news, but I can only give you the news that's actually going on. So don't shoot the messenger. I'm just the messenger. I'm just delivering what's going on and trying to make you aware, and I will give you the best and most practical ways of fighting it and being on top of your money this year. That's a promise. I can't promise that the external factors are going to be so good. Anyway, on that note and on that promise, I love to give you Money Tip of the Week. That is a segment in this show where I give you something short and practical for you to implement either right now, preferably when the show ends, because, you know, we've got a brilliant still. We're only halfway through the show right now. So maybe stick around, write these things down, and then actually do them, because that's what I mean. It's a short, practical tip that you can actually implement to get better with your money. And our first ever Money Tip of the Week, of course, is going to be 3 ways to financially kick off 2025. Make 2025 the best year for you and your money so far. And I just want to give you 3 steps, 3 things to do in January. I don't care if it's today, but please, like, try and do it to some extent. Number one, please give yourself a financial audit. I know it sounds awful, it sounds boring, but you need to rip off the band-aid. I used that term a few minutes ago when we were talking about, like, being aware of what's going on in the future. You need to be aware of what's happened in the past with your money, especially over the past 3 months. Find every single place that money comes out of your wallet or goes into your wallet. So every bank account, every credit card, every investing, every savings account, whatever it is, make sure you are aware and take a look at what's been going in and out. That is number one. Then number two, organize. Organize your spending. Get rid of the subscriptions that you are no longer using. Just get things in the right order. I mean, there are 5 key accounts that you want to be aware of, okay? Emergency funds, short-term savings, long-term savings, pensions, and of course, your current account. Think about all of those 5 and make sure you've got them, okay? And lastly, learn these words. Live within your means. I mean, a lot of us are going to get bonuses and pay rises in around April time or even at the beginning of the year. Don't let your cost of living or the amount that you spend every single month shoot up with however much you got in extra money. Save as much of that as you can and learn the words live within your means. And on that note, stick around. We've got another short break where I'm going to be joined by Niaz Azad, the co-founder of Millennial Money UK and the host of the Loose Change podcast.
Fubar Radio.
Access all areas with Bobby Norris.
We've got Georgia Harrison. My SIS sister. That's when I thought shit's got real.
Well, I got out, didn't I, with my little earmuffs on and my scarf. And they didn't show that either because obviously I can't put everything in. But he looks at me and he goes, what the fuck are those? And he grabbed my earmuffs and he threw them across the New Zealand landscape. I thought, that's a fucking liberty. £3 from Sheen they were. I was still in my Sheen Queen era.
You're listening to Fubar Radio.
Download our app now to listen to your favourite shows, such as Access All Areas, Politics Uncensored, and The Dating Show. You can also download and catch up on previous episodes of all Fubar shows, including our box sets. Plus, you can get in touch directly from within the app.
Just search for Fubar Radio on the Apple and Google app stores.
Yeah. The Fubar Radio app. Get it today.
Get it today.
It was calm on the beach, so I took my little girl out on the water. Then we hit the wind, and it blew us out to sea, faster than we could paddle back. And we learned our lesson from these guys, the crew who got us home. Thank you.
Respect the water and watch out for the winds. In an emergency, call 999 and ask for the Coast Guard.
Registering to vote means you can take part in the way decisions are made in the UK. When you register to vote, you are then able to cast your vote at local and national elections. You can help choose who runs your area and makes decisions about things you care about. Millions of people in the UK aren't registered to vote, and they miss out on having their voice heard. It's quick and easy to register. It only takes 5 minutes. You can do it online, or you can ask for a paper form at your local council. Register to vote now at gov.uk/register-to-vote.
Politics Uncensored with Ali Milani and Zoe Grunewald.
What would you be advising the Labour leadership to do at this point?
My view is just apologise. I went to the theatre last night. I'm with my wife and family, and as I'm walking, a bloke says very loudly, "John McDonnell, has he paid for his tickets?" I went back to the bloke, said, "Yeah, I did pay for my tickets, and I always do." What that whole ticketing thing and all the free gifts thing doesn't just damage those individuals, it damages us all, because they all think, oh, they're all the same, and we're not.
What the hell with Gabby Allen.
Now I am joined by Faye Edwards, international fitness presenter. How do you personally stay so motivated?
We are all aging. That is my motivation. Sorry, Gabby. It's the truth. And we can't change that, but we can help ourselves and keep our independence for as physically long as possible. It's about lifestyle. I have a better lifestyle. That is my motivation.
That Money Show on Fubar Radio with Gabriel Nussbaum.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Money Show with me, Gabriel, That Money Guy. And joining me now is a very special guest. I'm very excited that we've got him on the first episode of 2025. It is no other than Niaz Azad, the co-founder of Millennial Money. If you haven't heard of them, you really should have. And obviously the host of the Loose Change podcast, another one you want to be listening to this year, because this is the year where we all get better with our money. Niaz, welcome to That Money Show. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me, Gabriel. Happy New Year. What an honour. First show of the year.
Happy New Year. I've got to be careful. I don't know how long I can keep saying Happy New Year. I know it's the first show of the year, so I definitely can get away with it this week. Next week, not sure. The week after, maybe. I'll probably get slated.
Maybe. It's the first Monday of the year, so definitely you can get away with it today.
I'll take it. I'll take anything that I can at this point to get us through the start of the year, getting my work brain back into motion. Anyway, 2025, like I said, it's going to be the year where anyone listening to this show is officially getting better with their money. And I need your help, Niaz. I'm going to need your help because we need to talk about setting New Year's resolutions, how to just make the most of your money this year. Last year felt a bit like a shit show. I mean, things got expensive. Maybe not as expensive as the year before, but things were still getting expensive. Interest rates were still high. If people were looking to borrow money, they were starting to come down, but they didn't come down that much. Inflation came down, but then started to go back. I don't know. Things still feel like they're a little bit all over the place. So 2025, we got a fresh start right now. And I know that you love talking about, you know, kind of like that mindset when it comes to money, as well as practical tips. So let's start off with the top three. I'm going to put you on the spot here. You can give me one if you want, but top three most impactful money-saving habits that people can cultivate right now.
Perfect. Well, thank you for putting me on the spot. But yeah. I would say straight off the bat, when I'm someone who's not naturally very frugal, but I have to force myself to do it. And actually straight off the bat is about holding yourself accountable. You need to stop kidding yourself when it comes to your money. And I know not everyone likes to hear this. The best way to hold yourself accountable is to start budgeting.
Ooh,
and that can come in many shapes and sizes. I know we all hate it, Gabriel. I know we all hate it. But it's effectively just making sure you know exactly what you have to start with, how much you've got going out and how much you've got left over. and where you're going wrong. I think as soon as you start doing that, you can really properly hold yourself accountable and see where your money's actually going. And that will then help you to create a plan for how you want to take things forwards. So I'd say hold yourself accountable. And then with budgeting, this is more of like a next one. A number two for me is try not to lean into convenience too much. When I held myself accountable and looked at my budget and actually looked at where my money was going, there was I'm embarrassed to say how much was going on takeaways and just paying for convenience for things. So I would say try your best not to pay for convenience at every opportunity. And then number three actually is probably something which will be quite surprising, is actually forgive yourself if you make mistakes. You're not going to have a perfect approach to your money. You're not going to have a perfect approach when it comes to your budget. Don't think of it as completely derailing you. If you do overspend 1 month, it's fine. Look at where you went wrong and try to make things better the next month or the next week.
I like
it. So I would say that's a helpful plan of action to take into the new year.
Those are three good ones. We're already giving the people gold when it comes to what to do in 2025 with their money. And I absolutely love all of that. I especially like the convenience one. I'm not going to tell you how much I spent on delivery this year either, because it's embarrassing, because it's just so much. And, you know, like, it's such an easy way, theoretically, to save money because groceries are that much cheaper. But I think just, you know, towards the end of the year, you know, December time, things get a little bit out of control. And January is the year for maybe, I know you said you're not the most frugal person, but January is definitely the month for frugality for me. Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. But what about you with your money? So, you're obviously very good with your money. You talk about it. You literally have the Millennial Money Show and all the other areas that you do to educate the world about money. But what does 2025 look like for you from a financial perspective?
So, really good question. I don't actually even know if I am really good with money. I've had to force myself to become really good with money because of old bad habits. This year for me, I think I'm gearing up for some bigger expenses and how that might impact my lifestyle. I think for the last couple of years, I've been able to treat myself to some big holidays, which have been priceless expenses for me. I've really enjoyed that. But this year I'm trying to reallocate some of that to prepare for some bigger expenses, potential home purchases, and then thinking about how I think mentally preparing to let go of large sums of money, and then afterwards what it's going to look like to then restart my contribute into my investment portfolio and building that back up. So yeah, it's easy to say that I think for many of us in the personal finance and money space, we just sort of say, yeah, we're just going to put this money aside and invest this money. But we also have to talk about sometimes we're investing that for a purpose, or we're saving for a purpose. And then there comes a time that you have to part ways with that large sum of money for a good reason. And then start thinking about saving that up again.
We are so on the same page right now, because I'm also at that stage in my life right now where I'm looking to make that bigger purchase. And I'm actually going to see if we can get you in for an entire special episode where we talk about the idea of, like, what is all that saving for in the first place? Because I think young people get told so much, you know, save X amount every single month for the rest of your life, percentage, you know, annual returns, blah, blah, blah. You'll have X amount by the time you retire. But the truth is, you're probably going to need that money at the stage where you make the big purchase in your life. Whereas you need to be told, like, no one ever speaks about, well, I'm actually going to start again at the age of 30 or 35 because it's all going out on a property, or, you know, it's all going out on another big thing that I need to purchase, a business potentially that you're starting or something else, you know, another risk you're doing with your money. And, like, I've also started to, like, look around and no one talks about that. It's always, you know, saving for when you're 60 and for when you're 70, not for, like, the big purchase you make at the middle of your life, which is probably going to be a property. So we're gonna bookmark that one. And good luck to you, by the way, on that journey, because I know that I've needed all the luck that I can get. So I'm going to give you as much as I can give you right now. But what does January look like for you? So is there any kind of reset for you? Do you spend some time looking at your money? Is that a monthly habit you do anyway? Or does January have a specific purpose for finances?
Absolutely. I think it's a reset overall. I think it's a nice reflective period for things in my life. For me, like, health and money sort of go hand in hand. And I think January for a lot of people is that period where they can reset and realign some goals. I think it's just a natural restart of the year, and you can draw a line under certain things maybe last year. I think I What I've told myself is the sooner my financial management has become as boring as possible, in that I don't get excited for a certain month, the better I'm doing when it comes to my finances. So I'm in a positive place that January isn't like, I'm not reaching for January to restart my life, thankfully. But there has been occasions where maybe I was like, yes, this is going to be my year. But for me, it's just looking ahead, January gives me an opportunity to plan like for the next 3 to 6 months. So I like to generally look 3 to 6 months ahead. What is this going to look like for me? Where are my big expenses going to fall? What can I project? So I guess for the first half of the year, I can think about what my big expenses for the year are going to be, and then where I'm going to be allocating my savings and investments, or where I'm going to be, saving in the short term for some of those bigger expenses that I might need to make. So it's a good opportunity for me to reset, but actually project what the next few months of my life will look like financially.
I like it. You mentioned one way that you're doing that is the saving, kind of like switching holidays. You know, you've had that little bit more luxury where you can, if you don't have a big purchase in mind, you've got a bit of savings. That's probably what your savings should go towards, to treat yourself every single year, but you're switching that. Are there any other kind of realistic and kind of sustainable ways that you're looking to reduce, or anyone can look to reduce, their everyday expenses?
So, yes, I think the things that have worked for me is actually, we operate in a digitally native world now, right? Our money is fairly digital and really intangible because we don't feel it as often. We're not handling cash as often. So what I would say in this digital world is to separate your money as much as possible and allocate a use and a purpose for it, because that has a psychological impact on where your money's going and what it's been allocated for. So I would advise, if you can, have separate accounts for different things, and in particular for your spending. And then you could allocate that, let's say, at the start of the month or at the end of the month when you've been paid, whenever suits you best. And a portion, almost like you're giving yourself a salary from your salary for your spending. And again, you can, I think, be as generous as you like with yourself, but be realistic. And if you do run out, it's fine to be like, okay, where did I go wrong? But move that money and be like, okay, I'm giving myself this amount to spend, and I'm going to see if I can make things work. Because usually what happens is humans tend to live to their means. And if you've set yourself a means to spending, you, by some nook or crook, usually you'll find a way to make it work. And then similarly, you pre-allocate how much you're planning on saving or investing as well at the start of the month, and separate that money as soon as possible when you're managing your money, when you get paid, as close to you getting paid as possible, I would say.
I love that. One of the best things that I started doing towards the end of 2024 was literally allocating an amount of money that I can spend on whatever I want. Like, yeah. It's literally like that money's gone. Like, it's gone, and it will be spent. And it's crazy how much kind of freedom it gives you and how much of a better saver I am because of it. Because I know that money has no responsibility whatsoever. I can spend it on, if I want to eat lunch every day when I'm in the office and just pay for lunch, that's decision good. That I can make now. It's not a good financial decision. Let me get that straight. But that's what that money can go towards. If I want to put it towards a silly purchase on a bunch of clothes or whatever it is, I'm not saying that clothes are silly, but sometimes they are. If they got a brand on them, sometimes they are. But that's kind of one of the best things I've ever done. And especially with, like you mentioned, the way that everything is digital, and so many banks now give you the opportunity to split your money inside of that one account. So it's not like you have to start building or signing up to 5 or 10 different banks. I mean, Monzo, Revolut, they all have these things like pots.
Pots
and jars. And it adds that level of friction. So if you see that you've got £1,000 sitting in your holiday fund, it's very unlikely you're going to withdraw that to buy yourself, £500 worth of clothes, because you know that that's going towards something else that you want, and you're not going to do that kind of little change. So I love that. And I think that splitting it up is one of the best ways to save money, because everyone wants to hear the tip, which is change from this to this. But what you've said is a mindful, a psychological way that will, I can guarantee it, will make you spend less money. All right. Final question. 2025. One thing that people should have top of mind. We gave good practical tips, psychological tips, but what's one thing top of mind when it comes to anything to do with money that will make them be better in 2025?
I would say, and this is a big reminder to myself, first and foremost, is just be really intentional with your money. And I think, Gabriel, you just described that really well, because you said that you allocated a bit intentionally, that you were just going to be able to spend guilt-free, and having that intention behind your money is the best way. I think we forget, we give ourselves a bit too much personal discretion when it comes to money. And I think the best thing to do with your money is just to be really intentional with it. So know what you're spending and what it's contributing for, what it's contributing towards, whether that's you being able to fulfill some of your impulses and giving yourself that freedom as well, because that's something that you need. Just be intentional. And then if you, for example, know that you would really like to save towards your future, be really intentional about that sum of money as well. If you know that you've actually felt really squeezed for a while and actually you do want to enjoy some of your money in the short term, that's fine, because you know you're doing it for a particular purpose. I think intentionality is really important. And then I think the other big thing, and I think it's a mindset thing, I'm kind of cheating because I'm adding a bit into it.
I'll let you off.
A reminder to what I said previously is to forgive yourself when it comes to your money as well, if you do make mistakes, because our relationship with money is much more emotional than we realize. We don't have a rational relationship with money. And understanding that our relationship with money is non-rational and actually much more emotional should help you understand maybe some of our own behaviors towards money. So controlling our emotions actually will help us control our money as well.
And I'll say this to anyone listening right now. If Niaz ever repeats a point, you probably should have noted it the first time, and he's giving you a second chance to take that one down. So if he says something twice, please do not ignore it, because he ain't going to say it a third time. Niaz, thank you so much for joining me on the first show, That Money Show of 2025. And we're going to bookmark our next conversation all about resetting your life at some point.
Thank you for having me, and I hope you have an amazing year. I'm sure I'll see you soon.
You too. Well, there we go. That was Niaz Azad, the founder of Millennial Money, as well as the Loose Change podcast. I would highly recommend you searching for both of those. Anyway, now is the time where I answer your questions. Every single week, people DM us on Instagram at That Money Show, a very simple name, and you write in your questions. Or if you're watching on the live stream, you can also ask us questions as well. And I'm going to answer them live on the show. This is what we do. Question number one, coming straight in from the live stream, is what app should a 17-year-old use to invest? Now, number one, this is very important. You can't actually invest until the age of 18 in the UK. Probably not such the answer that exactly that you wanted. But that's fine, because in the UK, we have something called a junior ISA. And within junior ISAs, you can have a junior stocks and shares ISA, which allows you to invest below the age of 18. However, your parental or guardian or whatever it is fully in control of that account. So, let me explain. Below the age of 16, you basically, they need to open it for you. They're in control of it. They pick where the money goes, et cetera, et cetera. But you can see it's still the accounts in your name and you can have the discussion with them. But ultimately, it's their decision. From 16 to 18, you take control of it, but you can't withdraw that money. And from 18, you can withdraw that money. Now, most investing platforms have some form of junior ISA. So I would recommend just typing in best junior ISA, have a little read through over the various ones. And that is how you can start investing before you're 18. Shelby has asked, I've just lost my job and I'm in the period of unemployment between my next job, and I'm also worried that my student loan payments will remain the same. Is this the case? If not, can you explain why? So when you are not earning a salary, you do not pay student loan, because it comes out of your PAYE. So which means that it's automatically deducted by your employer every single month. And when you're not earning, for example, if you're not earning full stop within a year, you don't actually pay anything towards your student loan until you hit a threshold. Now, it depends what plan you're on. If I think the current new plan, it's $25,000. The one I'm on, which is plan two, is $27,000. Ish. So you don't pay if you're earning anything above that. And that should have been coming out of your salary from your previous job. Now, if you, like you said, you're in a period of unemployment, you're not earning a salary. So therefore, no student loans should be being deducted. You will see your student loan, if you look at the amount that you owe, start to tick up because there's interest on that, but you won't be paying anything towards it. Another question from Samir says, I'm 28 and I have no savings, have previously been in a significant overdraft debt. The concept of saving is terrifying to me, given my friends are so far ahead of me and they will almost certainly achieve life goals like buying a house before me. Is it ever too late to save? Well, firstly, Samir, it says you've previously been in significant overdraft debt. That means that you're no longer in it. Congratulations. That is a massive financial step. Number two, it's a simple answer. Is it ever too late to save? The answer is absolutely not. You are 28. You are 28. I mean, maybe if someone was asking me at the age of 65 that they want to retire and they've got no savings, then you'll be like, slightly different position. You probably have about 40 years of your working life ahead of you. There is never going to be too late to save. In fact, if you're thinking about this at the age of 28, you are ahead of most people. So learn good habits now, learn them young, take it easy on yourself, forgive yourself. It's not a competition. We like to keep up with the Joneses. If your mate's doing better than you with finances, like you think that your whole life's falling apart, You're not. The average person in the UK buys a house at the age of 36. So theoretically, if you want to be average, you have 8 years to buy your first-hand property if that's an objective that you have in life. I hope I've calmed you down just a little bit. And one more question from Ryan. Do employers have a duty to pay into a pension pot for me? If that is the case, what is the minimum they are required to contribute? So if you're an employee, you do have rights when it comes to pension contributions from your employer. So if you contribute 5% of your salary, pre-tax salary, for 5% contribution of your salary, your employer has to put in 3% minimum on top of that. Now, that's not 3% coming out of your money again. That is a 3% bonus of your salary on top of it that goes towards your pension. A lot of companies offer you a lot more than what I've just told you. So they'll do 5 and 5, or 7 and 7, or 10 and 10. Remember, this is free money that you do not get back if you turn it down month to month. So take the free money, people. Take the free money if you can, contribute towards your pension and get as much of that match as possible. I said kind of like 5 tentatively, which is because it's kind of 4 plus 1. The government give you one of that percentage. Anyway, that's it for the first ever That Money Show of 2025. I would like to thank Amy and Niaz for coming on the show. What brilliant guests to kick it off with. And reminder that you can get us on every podcasting platform. You can download the FUBAR Radio app and listen to us live every single week. You can DM us at That Money Show on Instagram with any of your questions and we will answer them live here on the show. I've been That Money Guy. This has been the first Money Show of 2025. We'll see you next week.
FUBAR Radio.